As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Son of Slovenia, cool as hell. He scores the ball and he rebounds well. Don't fight the future. Future is Luka. The timing sucks cause the Mavs are ass, but did you see his no-look pass? Whoa! Don't fight the future. The future is Luka.
Hello, this is 77 Minutes, a Dallas Mavericks podcast, part of the Athletic Podcast Network, the only Mavericks podcast that never thought we would exist long enough to actually see the Mavericks use a trade exception. This is just a stunning day, a historic day. You know, they actually got one, and they used it, honestly, using two first-round picks? When's the last time that happened?
That's more rare, and I can actually answer that question. I threw that question out on Twitter, and someone threw it back at me, gave me an answer.
Wasn't it Ian?
It was Ian.
Our old friend Ian from Mavs Moneyball.
Ian from Mavs Moneyball is a great draft guy. It was in 2005. The Mavs took Devin Harris, who we all love and was a great Mav here. And they took Pavel Podolsky, 7'5" giant, who was on that 06 finals team.
I only know him through NBA Live 2005.
Same. Yeah. I also know he was great. He could take fadeaway three-pointers. It was honestly a good time.
I'm Tim Cato. I write and talk about the Mavericks. We've got Austin Gurria, who also writes and talks about the Mavericks. And we're here after a, you know, just objectively successful evening for the Dallas Mavericks, who turned a number 10 pick into, you know, three players while moving off Davis Bertans' contract. And this is kind of a weird feeling, right? Draft night success is not something that frequently comes as clearly to this team as I think it did tonight. But I find it very difficult to find any faults. As Nico Harrison said, I think we killed it. That was an exact quote from him I think the last quote from him to end his final press conference to close out the night. And, you know, to be honest, I think I agree.
I agree as well. I don't really have any criticisms of the draft process. I mean, I think it's their best draft night outside of drafting, obviously, Luka or drafting Dirk. But
sure. Okay, the Luka draft was pretty good.
The Luka draft, pretty good. Dirk draft, pretty good. Even Jason Kidd draft, when they draft him, that's pretty good. Anytime you draft a Hall of Famer, it's a good time. But I think this was the best draft night as far as, like, they had to nail the draft where there was a lot of uncertainty. There was not a clear superstar that they were aiming for. And it was, they not only got a good player with their draft pick, but they also traded back into the first round and got another player and got off a big contract that they wanted to get off of. And they also kept all of their role players that we all anticipated that they were going to trade at some point in this offseason. I think it's not a scenario that I considered in the entire draft process. I think they made two trades that no one else had on their board at any point.
So That's interesting. I want to go through the players, and we're going to talk about mechanics a little bit later of how everything happened. I think the most interesting thing that I heard Nico say was that for as much as they run through every possible scenario, for as much as they had 10 to 20 different scenarios in play going into the night, and then even variations upon those scenarios, he said that both moves they made were not on their radar when they actually got to make them. And I thought that's really fascinating, which obviously one set up the other. And so there is a level of reactiveness to that, but it's fascinating how this stuff plays out.
It is really fascinating because I, especially that OKC trade, like I don't think anyone had sending Bertans into cap space. I thought they might make a deal with OKC because OKC has so many first round picks that there was an opportunity maybe for them to move back to 12, pick up an extra draft pick and draft someone that they wanted. I think Cam Whitmore free falling in the draft.
Let's get off to the, we're going to get to that. Yeah. Let's get to that.
We'll get to
you,
that.
You are a Lively believer. You, with the number 12 pick, Dallas gets Derek Lively. What do you think?
It's great pick. I would have been, if they had just came out with Lively at number 10, I would have been like, you know what? That's a B, maybe B minus draft to me. I thought he was a really good prospect. I think he absolutely fits what they want to do and what they need on a roster. Also, as a prospect, defensively, he is an elite defensive prospect. All of his analytics lead to believing that he's going to be an elite defensive rebounder. Not defensive rebounder, but defensive shot blocker. His block rate, his steal rate, you know, the minutes that he played. All of his advanced analytics are up there with, like, Anthony Davis, Evan Mobley, Jaren Jackson Jr. He is a,
and like compared to Mobley and Davis's college numbers, right?
College numbers, yes. As a freshman in college, he has really, really elite numbers. And he played a few games this year where he dominated the game on the defensive end by himself, where he just dominated the paint. I think he had a game against North Carolina where he scored 5 points, but he really dominated the game on the defensive end. And that's really what they need. Also, he's a person and a prospect that knows who he is. He's not coming in here looking to get post touches. He doesn't want to score 20 points a game. That's not what he's really concerned with. He wants to screen, roll, defend the paint, dunk the basketball. And that's clearly what the Mavericks need. He's a great pair for Luka. Hopefully he's someone who plays with Luka for a very long time. And I think he's not only the right prospect and like basketball profile, but also kind of person that I think really fits with the franchise.
Yeah, when he did his brief press conference sort of phone call, he's going to have a real press conference. Both prospects are on Monday. But he did the Mavs PR in New York called Mavs PR in Dallas and put it on speakerphone. And the media, you know, the traveling beat reporters, we asked him a few questions. And something Michael Finley had said when he came up and he talked a little bit about Lively was that he was somebody that they worked out. They worked out both guys. Obviously, they don't release who they work out. The Mavericks were at that famous Los Angeles Lively workout where he hit all the threes and where, you know, the stock really started rising. But they brought him to Dallas and they didn't bring him to Dallas to be like, oh, shoot a bunch of threes for us. They brought him to Dallas to work him out defensively. And specifically what Michael Finley said was that they basically put him in Dallas's schemes. And it was like, how quickly can you pick up on stuff? And so I asked, I asked Lively about that. And he just starts rattling it off. I thought he was not going to go, you know, I asked kind of a strategic technical question. And so there's nothing wrong with him going in that direction, but he absolutely did. He leaned into it and he was like, yeah, you know, like this is a show. This is a drop. And he's just rattling off different ways that Dallas was asking him to respond to pick and roll coverages, to respond to, you know, 3-on-2 weak side situations. Where does he need to be? And he's just walking through all of that over the phone to somebody he's never met before. Look, he's an NBA prospect, a first round pick. This is what you should be able to do if you're going into the profession of basketball. But it still stood out to me because not every player is so open. And it seemed clear to me that he has a very good understanding of, you know, who he is and how the NBA is going to work. I'm not sure he's a ready now player. You know, I think he will play next season. Actually, that's a good question. How many games does Lively? Let's assume he's healthy the whole year. 82?
I think he plays in all the games.
Yeah.
I think the thing about Lively is that he has very good basketball hygiene. And basketball hygiene just has good, just, and you know what basketball hygiene is, just like he knows how to play basketball, is going to do the right things. He's not trying to do anything that's outside of himself. Like, I would say he's the anti-Christian Wood in that he's going to do exactly what the coach wants. And he's going to make mistakes. He's not a guy who's going to play 40 minutes a game or 35. But he's a guy who can, he needs to go in there and play 15, 20 minutes a game. And also his size and his defensive instincts will make up for a lot of any rookie mistakes that he makes. He's already their best defensive big man on the roster.
Yeah, when you're 7'1", 250, it's hard not to make an impact on the court.
And he has a 7'7 wingspan, and he has good instincts, and he can move. He runs like a deer. Like, he's going to be somebody that is going to make it. It's going to be obvious when he's on the floor. When he's on the floor, it's going to be obvious whether it's good or bad versus when he's off the floor. And it's going to take some time for him to get acclimated to the NBA game. And the shooting is really not something that is, the shooting is not the reason why he was drafted high. If he shoots, that's great. That's honestly, if he shoots, that means he should have been like a top five player that should have gone in the draft.
Right.
But the shooting is not, you know, dependent on him being a good NBA player. I think he's committed to the defensive end. He's a smart player and he's committed to learning the defensive concepts and he has the physical abilities to do that. And so I think, you know, I think he can be better than JaVale McGee was last year. I think he can be better defensively than Dwight Powell was last year. I think if you want him to just fit in and play 20 minutes a game and you want to play Maxey at the five for other minutes of the games, or if you want to play Rashawn Holmes for a few minutes, you know, I think he can be in a center rotation for them next year. He's not someone you need to hide or you need to sit on the bench to learn. I think he's someone who needs to play to learn.
I think that's fair. I think it's hard to imagine the Mavs spending a number 10, a number 12 pick on a dude who offers nothing they have on the roster and still offers nothing. You know, Rashawn Holmes is not a, you know, he's a bit of an undersized center.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess we can cover Holmes real quick here. You know, Alex Lynn was playing over him in the playoffs last year. I don't have high hopes for him, but what the Mavericks are trying to replace is not, you know, replacement level big man play from last season. They're trying to get like better below average, below replacement level center play. And maybe Holmes is not as bad as JaVale McGee was last year. That's basically the hope.
After the Kyrie trade last year, they were the worst paint defense that I have ever seen in NBA basketball. I've never watched an NBA team be that bad at interior defense. And maybe Rashawn Holmes isn't a good NBA player, but he is someone who at least can be serviceable on that end and at least offer some level of resistance and be a rotation player. You know, it's just a part of a center rotation, however it settles out in free agency, because I don't think they're done yet, because they still have JaVale McGee, Tim Hardaway Jr., Reggie Bullock, Maxey Bullock, Maxey Kleber. I don't think all those players are going to still be on the roster.
Say Maxey Bullock?
Maxey Bullock, which is just, I'm just combining all the Mavs role players.
But you could combine them and they still would never, they would average zero attacks of a closeout per game.
Maxey Bullock.
Because zero plus zero is still zero.
Maxey Bullock might be the worst fusion of two NBA players. It doesn't improve anything. It's just the same player.
Oh my God.
That might be a little bit of an indictment of the Mavs role players, but they're both good, individually good players, but maybe don't improve each other at all.
Who was it? It was probably Josh Bowe. It's always Josh Bowe on Twitter pulling things, but he was like pulling the drives per game
from the
role players. And Bullock was literally like 0.5 per game.
No,
like every other game he would drive, which is going 20 feet to like from beyond 20 feet to within 10 feet with a live dribble. He would do that once every other game.
He might be the best player in the NBA that cannot drive the ball to basketball.
Ooh.
He I think he is the like the most playable person in the NBA that you could that cannot drive to the rim.
Yeah. Boy. Let's talk mechanisms here in a little bit, but I don't have a lot of O-Max takes.
Oh, man.
And I know you do.
O-Max.
Let's see if I can get his name right first. Olivier Maxence Prosper.
You got it.
Yeah. There we go.
It's from Montreal. Great city. Recommend if you ever have an opportunity to travel to the city of Montreal. It's a beautiful city. Outside of that, he played at the NBA G League Academy in Mexico City with Benedict Mathurin.
Yeah, there. Yeah. He said that on his conference call with us as well.
He played there before he went to Marquette. So he has very good basketball pedigree, I think. I think what we're learning about Nico is that he's valuing guys who have really high basketball pedigree. If you look at all the guys he's drafted so far, Jaden Hardy, who played in the G League Ignite. Derek Lively played at Duke. Obviously, he was a big, big program. And then Prosper, who played at the G League Academy and also...
Well, you know another trend.
Yeah.
Hardy and then Lively. These are high school top
recruits.
What did Hardy top out at in his high school class?
He was number two in his high school
class. He was number two.
Number two to Chet.
And Lively was one.
And Lively was none.
So, honestly, it makes a little sense given his background. And, you know, I don't think either of us have any issues with the Hardy pick now.
No.
And we're so far positive about the Lively one. And so, you know, this is not a situation where, you know, it's a bad trend. It's just an interesting trend, you know?
I think if you look at his trend, it's pedigree and guys who just live in the basketball gym.
Yeah.
Hardy's one of those dudes. Hardy's been in the gym for the last 3 months. I keep seeing pictures of him on Instagram just like being in there. I'm like, you can be off right now. Like, you can go to Mexico for a couple of months. But that dude lives in the gym. But Prosper, big wing, I think he's 6'8", 6'9", has a 7 foot plus wingspan, strong, has a really strong build. He was a decent shooter at Marquette. I think he shot like 33%.
6'7", 7'1", wingspan.
Shot, I think, 33% from three.
33.9, so we can round up to 34.
And he has he shoots a nice ball. If you look at his shooting form, it doesn't have a form that he needs to completely reconstruct. And the guy just plays hard. Plays hard, has good basketball instincts. He can drive the ball a little bit, but is not a scorer. Not somebody who is going to be, you know, dominating the basketball and driving to the rim. But he's a guy on the defensive end who is committed to playing defense. He's a very good point of attack defender. He's a good help side defender. He's not quite the Taylor Hendricks level, like weak side rim protection. So he's not going to provide that. But he's guarding a big wing, guarding a post player. This guy is committed to that. And he is a guy who just plays hard all the time. And he's a defensive focused prospect. He's a guy that if they had traded out of the number 10 spot, I would have been very happy for them to select. Let's say they had traded for Clint Capella and traded back to 15. Had they drafted him at 15, I would have been that's a good pick, and I would have been satisfied with that.
He's got that dog in him, right?
He's got that dog. He is a dog.
And I love that we've got to the point that everybody understands what that means. It's like a legitimate scouting term.
He's got the dog badge. At least gold level dog badge.
Yeah. Can we go back to Lively real quick? One thing I've seen about him is, are we sure he's got that dog in him?
He's got that dog in him. He's just...
Maybe he's not like, offensively?
Not offensively.
Yeah, offensively is where I've kind of seen it, where I'm like, man, you should be finishing this. Look, I'm not going to invoke DeAndre Ayton's name. I just did. But like, it's not to that level. But there's a little bit of like, you're big, act big. And I think that's much more offensively, and thus does not matter as much. But, you know, it's just something that may pop up.
You know, I would definitely say this about Lively, in that on the defensive end, a dog. He's going to do everything on the defensive end. Yeah. On the offensive end, he will pass out of a lot of situations. He had a positive assist-turnover ratio. He's actually a pretty good passer. If you see him get rebounds close to the rim and he doesn't go up with it, he will pass the ball out. And there will be a lot of, like, there'll be a lot of times in the NBA, especially in his rookie year, where he gets the ball close to the rim and he passes the ball out, and people are wondering why he's passing the ball out. And that's kind of part of his game. Like, he's always trying to make the right play, and he's someone who probably needs to be pushed a little bit on the offensive end to go up with the ball and get fouled and dunk the basketball a few times.
So you think Luka might yell at him a little if one of his perfect passes does not get converted? You think that's the type of motivation we're talking about?
I think Luka yelling at him in Serbian a few times will do some good for him.
Hey, buddy, it's time to learn Serbian.
It's time to learn Serbian.
But in a good way. It's the first time that, you know.
And I think Luka will like him. I think also both of these guys have fun, good personalities that are going to be a
Lively
part
has
of the
hands.
Has hands. He catches the basketball.
Yeah.
He catches the basketball.
That's like the number one thing for Luka, and it's a big reason why Willie Cauley-Stein is just like, yeah, no.
Also, he can just throw him lobs. He won't have to throw him the basketball where he needs to make a basketball move. He would be just dunking the basketball at the rim.
Is this the point of the podcast where we pour one out for Davis Bertans?
It's time.
Man.
The laser.
Pew, pew, pew. He just keeps going north up I-35, which I would not recommend that personally, but
he took a quick detour to Washington, D.C. to get his check, but he's going San Antonio.
Well, he was actually lobbying to tear down I-35, so he was trying to get in with the politicians and the PACs. He's an urbanist, just like us.
You know, there's not much urban landscape between on I-35 between Dallas and Oklahoma City. I'm as much of an urbanist as I am.
I was going to say, have you driven it?
I have. I've gone to Oklahoma City on I-35. It's not a great drive.
There's like a 30-minute stretch that's sort of kind of pretty.
That's a sad statement. There's a 30-minute stretch that's sort of kind of pretty. That's
I mean, it's you cross the Red River. That part's, you know, like
that's in Oklahoma.
No, are you talking about San Antonio to Dallas? I thought you were saying I was talking Dallas to Oklahoma City.
I'm saying that's not even in Texas. Like, you have to get all the way to cross the state lines for it to get.
Oh, no, the pretty part is all in Oklahoma. All the pretty part is in Oklahoma.
So you have to drive out of the state for it to get sort of kind of pretty.
Yeah, I'm not trying to drive through Burleson and being like, oh, look at the site. I don't even know Burleson.
Have some Burleson listeners. Jesus, you're just calling out specific cities.
Oh, man, that's a very niche audience segment that I just alienated forever.
You did. That's a really nice suburb.
What do you think
they
go by? I was going to apologize to them, but I'm like, Burletonites? Burleans?
You will not slander the people from Burleson. You know who's from Burleson? Kelly Clarkson.
Well, you know what? She got out as soon as she could. What do you think inspired her fame? It was the desire to leave.
The people of Burleson might get you out of fame very quickly.
You know, that's fine. That's fine. You want to talk about how these trades went down?
I'm down to do that.
Do you have any clue?
So I will tell you my initial opinion when I saw the Dallas to Oklahoma City trade, because I thought it was like, oh, maybe the Dallas would eventually maybe trade down with Oklahoma City and maybe get like one of their future firsts, because they can't use all of them because they have a gazillion of them. And they would just swap future first and they trade up for 10. And then I also did a wonderful thing where I just did not look at Twitter for the Mavericks pick at all. I just watched it straight through television.
So you saw the trade, but not...
I didn't see the trade at all on Twitter.
Oh,
I had to. Oh, wow. I watched the trade through television, just...
Thought they had drafted Cason Wallace?
No, they announced that there was a trade, and then I was like, okay, what's the trade? Because Woj came on. So Woj came on the screen and was like, oh, so Mavericks are trading down to number 12, Oklahoma City. And I was like, and they're like, they're sending Davis Bertans. I was like, okay, sending Davis Bertans. I was like, are we getting something back here? Are we getting like a first rounder, a second, whatever? And I was like, no, Oklahoma City is just trading up to get to the number 10 pick, and I was like, this is a weird trade. And then they were like, Oklahoma City's taking Cason Wallace. And I was like, why did you trade up to 10 to take Cason Wallace? And the Mavericks weren't taking him, and I'm pretty sure the Orlando Magic were not taking him either. From my personal perspective, with no knowledge, I thought that Nico bullied Oklahoma City into taking this trade because there was a trade on the horizon from Atlanta to trade up to 10 to get Cason Wallace because they possibly wanted him, or New Orleans possibly wanted him and wanted to trade up, and they were doing a very big bluff. Because that's the only reason I could think why Oklahoma City would trade up and just take on Davis Bertans. as a beautiful favorite to the Mavericks.
I don't think that was it.
Let me know, Tim Cato, because I'm still confused as to why Oklahoma City did this trade, which is a great position to be in. I love a Mavs trade where I'm like, why did the other team do this? And we just got to trade down and get our guy.
So I think there's a couple things right away where the trade is just not quite as bad as it seemed up front, which is Oklahoma City is $40 million under the salary cap with all their contracts right now.
Makes sense.
And I don't think that they're going to go splash a big free agent. They have to reach the salary minimum, the salary, like the floor next season.
Yeah.
I've heard that they like Bertans. You know, they like him as someone to fit into the locker room.
He's
as someone
fun. I like him.
And they don't have any shooting.
That makes sense.
Now, to get his final year partially guaranteed, he can only play 75% of his game. So they're not trading for him like, oh, we're going to fix him.
Yeah.
But they like the idea that he can be a shooter on their team, something they don't have a lot of. That he can play in games, that if he doesn't play all the games, that, you know, he, you know, still going to be a funny guy to be around. And his money is actually in a weird way helpful to make sure that, you know, they're just up at where they need to be. You know, they have $90 million in payroll right now. They got to, you got to be at like 90%.
Yeah.
So they got to get up to like 118, and that almost does it right there. You know, Maybe, you know, they could have gone and paid. But, like, have you ever heard of, like, a one-year $20 million deal? Like, that's
I've seen it happen a few times, but it might be better for them to get Bertans, who is just, right. like, a guy that's not expecting to play, who's also already is on a big contract. And it's easier when you're in your fourth year than when you're just getting a one-year deal.
So the other thing I heard is Orlando was in between them, right?
Yeah.
Orlando was not going to take Cason Wallace.
Yeah.
Yeah. They literally have three Cason Wallace on their roster.
They literally have so many Cason Wallaces. That's why I was so confused as to why they traded up.
Orlando, or at least there was a threat that Orlando had offers from other teams that were going to trade up to 11 only if Cason Wallace was there. Obviously, Orlando kept the pick. A lot of the buzz was that they're going to take Grady Dick, and they opted for...
Jet Howard.
Yeah, Jet Howard. That was the first one that shocked me.
That shocked me, and honestly, great pick. I thought that was...
Interesting.
I thought that was a great pick.
I don't have strong feelings on it, but it was the first shocking move out of everything that happened.
It was
almost
very surprising.
Every single thing that happened was
The draft, yeah, it went chalk for the most part.
Yeah, the first nine was very normal. I will say, Cam Whitmore, that was everywhere yesterday from what I heard. Wednesday. It was very clear that he was going to fall. And it was very clear that I don't think the Mavericks made any sort of mistake passing on him. There's injury concerns. There's worries about his knees, and there's worries about just the way he treated the entire pre-draft process for multiple teams. So, there's worries that Orlando, who did a shock pick, who may have been able to trade back a few, given who they drafted, right?
Yeah.
They reached a little bit. I'm not saying in a bad way, but they reached a little bit.
They reached, yeah.
There may have been a 14, a 15, a 16, a 17 that they were willing to go back to, and those teams wanted Cason, and they felt like they still could have got their guy. But it all revolved around Cason Wallace. And so Oklahoma, just to be safe, just to take on something that isn't as bad as it looks for them anyway, they're very happy to do that deal, is my understanding.
That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
That makes a lot of sense. Because Cason Wallace is a good basketball player. If the Mavericks had drafted him, I would have been like, that's kind of a weird fit.
But he's getting top nine buzz.
But he's good. He's a good basketball player.
Yeah.
He's a very good basketball player. And the reason the Mavs were even in that position is because Bilal Coulibaly went in the top nine. He frazzled the whole thing. Honestly, I was waiting for Taylor Hendricks to drop to 10, and I was hoping they'd just take Taylor Hendricks and just walk away from the draft.
Yeah, I think that's the only player at 10 that they might have considered taking outright.
Yeah.
To my understanding. But I think that there was no chance he was getting past 9.
Yeah.
There was no scenario.
I thought that Utah might take a chance on Cam Whitmore, But now looking at back at the draft, that's
yeah.
Obviously, no one was taking a chance at Cam. They passed on him twice. That they could have taken him again at 16, and they just let him go. So obviously, like that, it was bad enough where they passed on him two times.
To do draft Twitter language, they were lasered in on Taylor Hendricks at 9. And then for Sacramento,
that was also kind of, I was like, thank you for just...
Holmes is a bad contract. He makes $12 million this year. It actually jumps up because he has a trade kicker to,
it's
I think,
like 13.9.
It's in the 13 range, 13.4, 13.9. Should have written it down, but we are not a podcast that does preparation.
I think it was...
We 13. Just go with vibes.
I think I saw it's 13.9.
Okay, so it's pushing $14 million. Positive. So there's a little bit of a trade kicker. He's also got a player option that for about the same amount. Well, he's got a trade option, a player option for about $12 million, which is what he was making this year before the kicker. And he's going to opt into that. It's not the best contract. It's the type of contract... Honestly, it is a lot like their Davis Bertans.
It is.
And even though the Mavericks can get a little bit more value potentially out of Holmes, just like Oklahoma can potentially get a little bit more value out of Bertans, it was still something that in all likelihood needed a first round pick to move off. And that's why it is impressive that Dallas was able to move off Bertans without having to do that. But I think for Sacramento, they're pretty much going to be the only team with cap space that actually plays 20 basketball. Yeah. And you can look around the free agency market. You know, there's not a lot of free agents that are super, super appealing, but there's, you know, definitely Kyle Kuzma.
I was going to say, there's a Kuzma out there that's just hanging out.
So, you know, if they wanted to upgrade Harrison Barnes, I think that's an upgrade.
It's a big upgrade.
Yeah. Fashion-wise, too.
And I think it's also very instructive that Portland took Chris Murray at 23, the pick right before Sacramento, because Chris Murray is Keegan Murray's twin brother, and I think he was tied to Sacramento pretty closely.
Wait, they're twins?
Yeah, they're twins.
How is one of them... Oh, one of them just stayed another year in college? Okay. For a second, I was like, how are they twins? But like, I just assumed they were both freshmen when they came out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they were tied to Chris Murray, but he went to Portland literally one pick before. So it would be interesting to see if they...
Wait, what's the correlation here?
They were tied to Chris Murray. So the Sacramento Kings had the 24th pick.
Yes.
And Chris Murray went 23 to the Trailblazers. He went off the board.
Right
before Sacramento picked.
Okay. Okay.
And Sacramento could have had another... Also, Chris Murray's a good player, a nice... big wing. If you didn't want to spend a whole bunch of money on Kyle Kuzma or whoever, Harrison Barnes, you could just draft Chris Murray and just just have a good player and also just have, you know, another player that supports your number four pick that you picked last year. So it's interesting that it worked out that way. You know, it's fortunate for the Mavs. I think what Nico did in this draft night was very optimistic. What Nico did this night is like why you hire a general manager to make difficult decisions and to survey the landscape and to make decisions that weren't out there. I think there's nobody out there who had either of these trades on their board. They weren't, I mean, I don't know.
And Nico didn't.
Nico didn't have these trades on this board.
His own admission.
There's nobody thought those trades were going to be available, and to be opportunistic and to make the most of what you had. You know, you turn the number 10 pick into the number 10 pick and Davis Bertans into Rashawn Holmes, Derek Lively, and Omax Prosper. That's pretty successful. You have, I think for me, my goal in the offseason was to, or at least from draft night, was to get a big and to get a big wing that can play the four. And I thought they would do that between getting probably a veteran wing or veteran center and then probably drafting one or the other. And they got both as rookies. And then they also got off the Bertans contract without having to give up any of their other players, which I thought that was going to happen in this process. And then they took on another center, but who I think can be at least someone who is a stable center for them, just like a rotation, someone who gets minutes, but not someone who is like an every game player, but someone who you can play basketball with.
I meant to say this earlier. I think Rashawn Holmes is just like Dwight Powell from a few years ago.
That's fine. That's someone that can play.
It's better than Dwight Powell
right now. That's what I mean. Like, that's a person who can play basketball for them. Like, it's not like, you know, they didn't take on someone who's like a guard that doesn't play any defense that like is just never going to play.
Like, I think he might annoy fans, or maybe they have their expectations are different and like he's new and so he won't. But I think he has the same undersized qualities where it's just like, why is this, you know, guy playing center not doing center stuff? But he's pretty good at rolling to the basket, and turns out Luka's pretty good at using him in that way.
Yeah.
It's going to be very similar to that, where it's not actually fixing the problems, but you look, if you don't have the perfect modern NBA center, it's still good to have a center that complements Luka really well. That is why Dwight Powell kept getting, you know, minutes. That's why he started so many games, because like, if you don't have the center that does it all, you at least get the center that makes Luka good.
He's a center that
makes Luka, you know what I mean.
He can buy time for Derek Lively. They have their center in the future. They're literally just buying time, and they have a center for two seasons who can just buy time and soak up minutes. And if someone has an injury or whatever, he is at least a NBA center who can just play and fill up innings. That's, you know, he's not someone who like, oh yeah, I need to go play him in my like closing five in a playoff game. That's not the case here, but he's competent.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
You were talking about Nico and, you know, just his, you know, hold and his influence over the draft. And all I'll say is that, you know, we talk about this a lot on this podcast. You and me have talked about this, about like, oh, who's actually running things? Like, what does it mean for, or maybe this was me and Dave, but we were talking about like, what does it mean that Dennis Lindsay, who was photographed, by the way, he was in the backdrop, you know, again.
He was there.
Yeah, yeah. Just to make very clear, like, yeah, he was literally in the war room. Like, there's the Mavs released photos of it, not of him specifically, but you can see him in the background of one of those shots they released. I just found it interesting. And again, this aligns with things I've been saying, that Mark Cuban's influence on the team is a little bit, you know, he's taken a bit of a step back ever since the kid and Nico hires. He kept walking around from... So we're at the Mavs practice facility, and there's a hallway that runs from the court, which was open to media for this because a lot of TV people shoot B-roll and things out there. But it goes from the court to like the front lobby. There's a bunch of interest in this place.
You guys have a good buffet this time?
Fajitas.
Fajita. It's the same thing they always do.
Yeah, but it's a. I think they did a different company. I think it was slightly better.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay,
that's
great.
Yeah. Huh. Because it wasn't at the AAC anymore.
Hey, Nico's sprucing things up.
I talked to Scott Tomlin, and he said that they actually looked into other meals, but he's like, it just wouldn't feel right. So the joke here being is that the Mavs used to do this at the AAC, and it was always a fajita meal. But it was like the Levy restaurant group, dining, whatever they're called, that that does all the dining at the AAC. So I think maybe it was the same company.
They brought y'all some special catering.
We had flan.
Nico's not just picking prospects. So. He's picking food.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Anyway, I'm in this hallway that kind of connects two parts of the Mavs, you know, war room and back offices. And Mark Cuban keeps walking back and forth between it. Like, I think he did it that I saw like five times. And it's almost 7 o'clock on the dot, right when the draft starts. And he walks through it then. And was like, hey, Mark, what's up? How are you feeling? And he's like, yeah, I got to go with my son because, you know, he's supposed to be in the war room. I told him I'd bring him, you know, when the draft starts. So, you know, read between the lines, whatever you want to do. Obviously, Mark Cuban has a lot of influence over what happens. But like at 7 p.m. when the draft started, he was going to get his son. You know, he wasn't in there making calls or looking over the shoulders of everybody texts. So
it sounded like from the quotes that Nico was really running this draft.
Yeah.
That he was running all the workouts and that he was identifying guys. I think there was even a quote.
He was at the Lively LA workout.
Yeah. I think there was even a quote for Omax where he's like, hey, I told you I was going to come get you and I was going to make this happen. And
I didn't see that one, but Nico did say that he really wanted to focus on the Big East, especially because he felt like there was undrafted guys to find there. And it turns out, you know, Omax was someone who rose, probably wasn't going to be an undrafted guy, but he rose a ton.
He did rose a ton. He was a second round guy most of the year, maybe undrafted, and became a first round guy. And, you know, before I've covered a draft at the AAC, and it used to be Cuban who came out. I covered the Justin Anderson draft specifically. And Cuban came out and did the press conference.
He's still going to turn good any second now.
He's out there. I've seen him in some YouTube pickup games with NBA players.
I saw him at 6 a.m. once in Vegas at a hotel gift shop.
But Cuban used to come out and do those press conferences. I mean, Chandler Parsons was behind him doing the having a good time. But he's no longer, I don't think he's daily involved in the scouting and the process. I think it's mostly Michael Finley and Nico Harrison doing all the scouting, doing all the selection and making sure that everyone is.
Matt Riccardi, Andrew Baker.
And I think for
Lindsay's involvement.
And Nico's time here, his draft record, you know, I think I've liked not only just the players that he's drafted, but I think, especially his first year, I think I like the players that he brought into the G League team and the players he brought into Summer League and the undrafted guys. I think he has an eye for talent. And I think as we move on the draft process, this is a very successful draft night. We'll get to see more and more how he navigates draft night because this is the way you have to build talent now with the second apron. You know, I mean, it would have been very funny if all the media members had just like worn an apron. Just maybe two aprons, just to say.
Austin, your idea of funny and average person's idea of funny is very different.
It'd have been funny for me as an outsider. That'd have been hilarious. But I think
so the joke here is that I show up wearing one, and it's like a bright color, or maybe it's like it's a normal color, and it's like, why are you wearing an apron?
And then you make a neck.
And then halfway through, you know, at the post press conference, at the pre Nico press conference, I wear one, and it's like noticeable because it's an apron.
And then
I have like a neon one that I wear though. And he's like, "What? Do you have another one?" I'm like, "Yeah, a second apron."
Second apron. You just pull it up.
Did you have a point to finish, dude? It's 1 a.m. I think we talked enough.
It's late. I was just gonna say that they they have a good idea of how to build a team within the new CBA constraints, and that it's through the draft. I did not think they were gonna come out with two rookies in this draft, especially two first rounders. That is literally the first time they've had two first rounders since 2005, and they got two first rounders who were two guys who I think are very good. Very good basketball players who Luka will join play with, who I think they pulled off, if you look at them getting since they've lost Jalen Brunson, they have acquired Jaden Hardy, Kyrie Irving, Derek Lively, and Omax Prosper. Obviously, Kyrie Irving is a veteran player. That's not a rebuild, but they've acquired three young players who are under 22 who are going to be very good players for them. And a problem with their team, even the Western Conference Finals team that was great, that we all loved, was an old team. That the average age of that roster, even the 8-man roster, was like 30 years old. And now they have an actual young team around Luka Doncic. It's the first time Luka has played with players who are younger than him.
Despite Jason Kidd's protests, contrary.
Despite his protests. But that's what they needed. They needed some younger talent. And they have players who can grow with Luka. And when because eventually Kyrie's going to not be on the Mavericks. It's not going to be here for 10 years. It's going to be here for maybe 3 or 4 years. They'll have talent that comes behind him. And that's, It's good. They have something they're building towards. At least they have a plan. Maybe the plan doesn't work out, or maybe it's not something that, you know, everyone agrees with, but at least it feels like they have something that's coherent and they have an idea of where they want to go from a team building philosophy. And I think in the past, that's been an issue for the team where no one really knew what their team building philosophy was. And I think we're starting to get an idea of what Nika wants to build as a roster around Luka.
You touched on a lot of things that I've actually thought, and we just did not have time to get to tonight. But I think we're going to be back on Monday. Mike Pelucci wants to record, I've been told. Well, he told me.
There's a lot of takes. So it's a lot of new players.
There's more to get through, and specifically there's more to get through about philosophy-wise, how this adds up, how this does make sense within the new salary cap, the new CBA. And then also, of course, obviously, all parts of the offseason are connected. What does the draft mean for the free agency to come?
They got the full mid-level now.
They got the full MLE.
That was another positive from the Bertans trade.
Yeah, absolutely. And by only basically downgrading $5 million. Anyway, we'll talk all about that next week. I promise. We'll be back. In the meantime, Austin, thank you. Listeners, thank you. Listening is what you do best. So why wouldn't you listen to us? We'll see you next week.
He plays Fortnite just like me. I am 34.
Don't fight the future, honey. Don't fight the future. The future is Luka, Big Dick Doncic from the home of Melania Trump. How many kids you have? Don't fight the future. It tears me apart. Don't fight the future. Please be nice to Luka. Future four-time MVP.
Oh, too bad. But.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.